In the fall each year we all congregate, the vows all gathered at the church of tailgate. The scriptures reading from the book of Munson, our favorite verse, my God of precious. Drunk and obnoxious, we're Georgia faith, ain't nothing finer in the land. Now the 3,000 of our best friends, it's Saturday in that thing.
Welcome to the Saturday in Athens podcast. We're a Georgia Bulldogs show. I'm your host, Seth Saunders, joined as always by my co-host, James Kim. And homie, we're in our favorite spot. We're doing the old school both host car tape. I am here for it. I just need to know this. Well, in Virginia, is it like it is here in South Carolina and like I'm sure it is in the classic city in Georgia as well? Homie, it is hotter than a $2 pistol in the Palmetto State.
Yeah, it is in the high 80s, low 90s, on and off today, and the humidity is just, it's rough. It's rough today.
I mean, took a shower this morning, walk out fully dressed for work, and it was like I jumped into a bath, fully clothed.
Yep.
Like, I just, woo, your boy is ready for some fall now.
And just for the record, anyone who sees this video and sees me in a sweatshirt, just so you know, I am in my car with the AC on full blast. It is not 90 degrees in my car, just so you know.
It is my boy's favorite outfit, though. If he can have a hooded sweatshirt on, life is good. So
yeah,
he's living his best life.
Hoodie, shorts, flip-flops. That's my go-to at all times.
Or a quarter zip. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you rock a quarter zip, too. And then if he's going to get real spicy, he might throw a visor on for y'all.
Yeah, maybe. That's usually my Saturday attire. Throw a visor on for, especially if I'm coaching my girls' soccer teams. Got to keep the sun out of my face. I am blind as a bat. So,
you know, the only thing that I think about, and this is probably a little bit sick and twisted, but all I think about when I am in weather like this, I just have emotional flashbacks to wearing them nasty practice jerseys and doing 7 a.m. mat drills, then rolling straight out full pads, roll until 11:30, and then pick your tire, get that weight belt, pull that tire on that dusty ass practice field. take your hour nap in the dark, cold gym, lay on top of a wrestling mat, and then get dressed in them soggy ass pants to go back for practice number two.
And then depending on the day, you never knew what the 3 o'clock ending of the day running was going to be. Whether it was going to be corners, relays, who knew what god-awful hell Coach Jones was going to have for us that day.
Oh, man, I traded on a minute. I'd risk it all for that again, brother.
Yeah.
It's funny, man. My nephew's playing, and so I was talking to my brother about it, and he was telling me about the practice. I said, but man, they outlaw 2-a-days, or is that like still a thing? He said, no, they got 2-a-days. He's like, but they start the first one at 5 o'clock and then the second one starts at 7:30. I said, man, that don't count.
That's all practice.
Yeah, that don't count. Man, you got to, like, first off, 2-a-days, biggest misnomer ever. It should just be called all days. We had all day practice today. Like, 2-a-days makes it seem like you got some kind of break. You maybe got a little refreshment in between. Nope, it's just an all day.
I remember when Coach Jones left our high school alma mater and went to his hometown the first time before he came back, and a bunch of the current players were there, and I went to his going away party, and I was like, man, y'all boys don't understand, because that's when he started doing the night practices. I was like, because he was doing the 2-a-days at night, and I was like, y'all boys don't understand. Y'all started practice at 5:30. Man, that's nothing compared to what we went through. That doesn't count. That's not 2-a-days.
No, man, Coach got soft. That boy done got soft.
So I wonder if he's going back to it now that his girls are older, because that's the excuse he used.
Let's just throw this out, too. We had, like, the best high school coach. Number one, our boy would roll out wearing full cleats for practice, which was just my all-time favorite. I mean, come out, like, he was fixing to do to Oklahoma with you, no pads. Like, he was going to go straight Australian rules rugby football with you. Oh man, I miss him. I miss him. And y'all, he didn't cuss because he was setting a good example. He was living with the Lord, so he wouldn't cuss. But you know, you still get frustrated, and so like stuff would come out that was, you know, you thought was fixing to be a cuss word, but just never made it. I mean, look, if he said it with the right inflection and voice, gosh dog it could sound worse than just about any four-letter word y'all can throw at me. I'm just going to put that out there.
Look, he was my coach from JV in eighth grade, you know, and on through 4 years of high varsity. Dag nabbit, Jimmy was my name. So, or dag nabbit Jimbo, that was my name. Like, it wasn't James. It wasn't, you know, 53. It was dag nabbit Jimmy. So that was my name for 4 years, 5 years.
I got to tell this story. We're going to talk about dogs football, y'all, I promise. But let Jimmy and I just relive the glory days here for a minute. Do you remember the day? Now, let's set this up for y'all. We ran a old school straight T offense, okay? So quarterback, three running backs spread out, the two, the three, and the four, okay? And then just straight double tight line. Like, homie, if we split somebody out, you would have thought we were Rich Rodriguez, West Virginia back in them days. We threw the ball maybe, I mean, you know, pre when he started doing the no huddle stuff. What do you think we threw it? My eighth grade year, your ninth grade year, like seven times a game maybe?
If that, I mean, that's generous.
I will say this though, led probably the entire Commonwealth of Virginia in yards per attempt.
That is true.
26 reverse pass was good for about 45 every single time called.
It's because no one ever expected it.
So anyways, we had a play, well, two play. You know, you're in a trap play. So we would run, 30, 31 trap, right?
I was 33 trap. He ran into his 33 trap. He didn't call it 31 trap. He called it 33 trap for some reason.
Well, so, but if you were the quarterback, to make that happen, it wasn't a straight, like, open up. You had to, like, step back, almost like you were pivoting to then run the triple option down the line and read the end, right? Well, so, you know, I was eighth grade, but coach was letting me practice up with the varsity to, like, get experience, whatever. So, I just remember intuitive. Remember a big Rick Martin playing the three who, man, y'all ain't want to see Rick Martin. That boy done laid some people out. So, anyways, Rick's coming barreling down the hole here to catch his handoff, and I must have screwed it up, God, I don't know, man, like 8 or 9 times. And, you know, Coach Jones come from halfway across the field, blowing, gosh, dog it, Seth Saunders, you're never going to be able to run this trap right. So, anyways, dude, about the 10th time, right, I'm like, you know what, I'm going to sweep this leg so far out that, like, the pulling guard could run through this hole if need be with Rick. And so I pull that thing out, and Rick runs straight through there, grabs a handoff, and, like, busts up the middle. Whistle blows. I see Coach coming, and I feel like I can see the steam coming out of his ears. And he drops that, gosh, dog it, Seth Saunders. We got it right. I'm so proud of you. And it was, like, the greatest moment in the history of my football career. The scale of emotions that I went through in that 35 seconds, y'all don't even know. Like, the panic that was inside of me when he blew the whistle that last time. Woo! Oh, man. Good old days, brother. Anyways, so, dogs are back in camp. And look, it's been hot there, too. Did you see the picture of Coach Shue today? Rolling out full sweatsuit. My man. Oh, I love it. That dude is just defense to the core. That's just an I'm hard move. That's like, we'll go back to our coach. Coach Jones, whether it was negative 10 degrees or 110 degrees, our man only wore shorts. Only. That's another thing he switched up. Now, he wears pants now. But not when we played. Shorts only.
Yes, and it was only the length of the shirt depended on the weather. It was never a sweatshirt. It was either a T-shirt or a polo, and it was a polo with a long sleeve shirt underneath of it when we played.
Correct.
That's it. Never a sweatshirt, nothing.
Usually the old school, you know, waffle cone, long john underwear, long sleeve. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yep.
I have seen him a couple of times, like in like a jacket now, with like a hood and stuff, especially if it's raining. And I'm like, what is this? Who is this guy?
I know, man. I'm telling you, getting got soft in his old age. That's what's happened. Yeah. So, anyways, that picture, Coach Shoe, cracked me up. So, scrimmage this weekend. Main things I heard out of Kirby's press conference were, number one, uneven quarterback play, which I think that's probably expected. I feel like he's always a little lukewarm on the quarterbacks, especially at the beginning of camp. I am interested to see, as we get closer here to September 2nd, if there starts to be some more definitive language. Because, look, man, we've said this on the show a gajillion times, but Kirby will tell you what's going on. You just got to be listening for it, which is why head coach Kirby Paul Smart brought up Cash Jones again in the press conference. So I'm just telling y'all, Cash Jones fixing to get some run. Y'all can mark that right now, August 14th. Cash Jones fixing to get some carries on September 2nd. No?
No, he definitely is. And I would not be surprised. It would not surprise me, depending on Paul's health, if he's the two. Because Rod has never taken a carry, and he's so big. He's not that – he's a different back. He's just a different style. Like, he's your short yardage, you know, run you over for 5 yards type guy. He's not your scat back type runner. He's not that style. I would not be surprised if Cash is your two behind Dejon, you know, opening day.
Well, he keeps harping on, you know, he can catch the football in the backfield, which, and we talked about this, I can't remember if it was last week or the last time we talked, but, you know, who's going to be Kenny? Who is going to replace Kenny in that role where we can split out or we can, you know, it may be Cash Jones. I mean, that's what I'm hearing in these press conferences. And y'all, we didn't jinx it, so don't come holler at us, but Kendall's got a hamstring again. So we have no idea what that's going to look like. They say that it's not as bad as it could be and all this stuff, but it's a hamstring, and he plays a position where you need speed and burst. So I don't know, man. I hope he gets healthy very quickly, because it's like we talked about. I think he's a 1,000-yard back if he's healthy. But unfortunately, that has become such a big if that who knows? And, yeah, I don't – it's just going to be interesting. I mean, what do you – the other thing that makes me nervous about Branson's injury is it being a foot. Like, I don't like foot injuries when it comes to football players. I just – all that weight, all that load, all that burst. So what's your feel on Smile?
I don't think we see Branson or Smile before October at the earliest.
Oh, don't tell me that.
I don't think there's a reason to rush either one of them back. We've got South Carolina week 3, but realistically, yep, before October, the main thing with them is going to be getting them back in football shape, because they're just not, I mean, they weren't able to go through the full off season like everyone else. And right now they're basically going through their off season now, and they're still not 100%. So I feel like that they're going to work their way back to 100% and go through their offseason and their conditioning stuff now to get back up to football speed. So I think they're going to be worked back in slowly. We may see them SC, but I would be surprised. We may see them dress out. Kind of remember like how Dom came in and he started to dress out and he get a couple of plays, and how Arian came back. Arian came back, got a couple of plays, but he wasn't really playing a lot. And then all of a sudden, boom, he started getting his regular reps in towards Tennessee. I think that's how we're going to see them, how we're going to see Branson and Smile. But I just don't see them. There's no need to rush them back right now, especially Smile. Branson, maybe, depending on how everything shakes out week 1 and 2. But like you said, foot injuries, you just don't want to push it. Kendall, I'll be truly honest with you, I don't see this being a quick turnaround because of the hamstring. I think they were hoping it was going to be, and I think after it being, because this happened first practice, I think with it being, we're now removed from it, a week and a half now, and it's just, I don't think they're where he's not where they want him to be a week out, week and a half out. I think they're thinking it's going to be longer.
Yeah.
Which I hate that for him, because he just can't stay
healthy. Yeah, man, he needs a year. I mean, he's, in a lot of ways, it's reminiscent of Arian Smith, which all reports for Arian have been good thus far in camp. And I believe that if he stays healthy for the entire season, it's going to be an electric factory for him. So, yeah, man, I hope that Kendall's healthy soon. But to your point, I mean, that's valid. Look, the South Carolina game's at home. Maybe I would feel a little more urgency about it if it was at Williams-Brice, but the first real test is going to be on the Plains. So I don't think you want to be rushing people back unless you have to. And I think that's the first weekend where you feel like, okay, it's imperative that we're as close to full strength as possible right here to run this gamut. And really, man, after that, well, I don't know. Kentucky at home scares me less, I think, than going to Lexington. But Mark Stoops always got a tough group. We'll see how things go at the quarterback position for them. I, in all honesty, think their offense will be better this year without Will Levis.
I do too.
I was never super inspired by him, so I think they got a chance to be a little more electric this year. Let me ask you this. This is more a college football at large question. We are taping on a Monday, and we're going to release Laura Rutledge's episode tomorrow, which is Tuesday. I asked her this question, and I'm interested in your answer. Who is the team nationwide that you are most interested in or has the most compelling story for you going into this season?
Surprise answer for you. Okay. Notre Dame.
Ooh, I like this. Go with it. Let me hear it.
I really was surprised at how lackluster they were last year. And I like Freeman as a coach. And bringing in Hartman, because they basically said, our defense is good enough. And our defense is good enough to really make some noise. So we bring in Hartman to revamp that offense because their offense was putrid last year.
Yeah.
I mean, and it wasn't just quarterback play. It was straight up, top to bottom. They had Mayer, who was a stud at a tight end. Their line was not bad, but it was not up to Notre Dame standards in the past.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they have all American caliber offensive linemen often on that offensive line. And they now have all pros in the NFL on that offensive line often. So they were just, their caliber was way low. They never really have stud running backs, but they don't really need them because their line plays so good. They just need people to produce. And their wide receivers, usually same thing. Their wide receivers are just average, but they produce. This year for Notre Dame, for me, is make or break, because now they're going into next season with all the realignment talk, they're not joining a conference. I know it's going to be a 12-team playoff, but they've proven time and time again that they can't do it when the lights are bright with four teams. How's it going to be when it's 12 teams and they got to win all those extra games? I really think if they don't make some noise this year, Notre Dame really kind of goes.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Back into obscurity, and we go back into the early 2000s type of Notre Dame teams where they're just kind of that 8-5, 8-6, where they're bouncing through coaches over and over and over again before Brian Kelly got there. And I hate that for Freeman because I think he's a hell of a coach, and I think he has really good potential to be a great coach, but maybe just not at Notre Dame.
What do you think about the Hartman transfer? Because I'll be honest, it struck me as a little odd. Obviously, if you listen to our show, you know, we're big fans of Sam Hartman, love what he did at Wake. But I think Sam's skill set fits a very specific offensive scheme. And look, maybe I'm wrong about that, okay? I'm not trying to pigeonhole him. But it seems to me he got some feedback that, look, your draft capital is not as high as you want it to be. And if you go to Notre Dame and season for another year, we think you got a better shot. And what I mean by season is I think they want to see him in a more pro-style offense. But I don't know if for Notre Dame that's what you want to do, right? I think if I was running the offense for Notre Dame, I would do exactly what fits his skill set, which is doing a lot of the mesh stuff. I mean, you know, Wake Forest has got that long mesh and he can pull or go and it leaves a lot of open space and they busted a lot of huge plays, scored a lot of points. And so how effective is he if they're not running a system like that?
Well, I think part of the reason that he got that feedback is the rule change in the NFL. You can no longer have that type of handoff in the NFL. That's a penalty now. Did you know that?
No, I did not know that.
It is one of the – I don't understand the rule change. Like, and I don't quite – I haven't seen – I haven't watched enough preseason. I've watched about 25 total preseason plays so far because I hate the preseason, but I love watching the dogs. So I haven't seen it a penalty called on it yet, and I don't exactly know how it's going to be implemented, but, like, you can't do the handoff where, like, a wide receiver runs in motion and you hand it off in front of them. Like, you can't hand it off in where the ball is in front of you. You can do it where it's to the side, like do the the veer, you know, the run pass option where the ball's to the side, the running back's to the side of you, but you can't do it where the running back's in front of you and you can't pull it and then run behind them. Like how Baltimore runs it a lot. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I get that.
And that's kind of how Wake Forest runs it.
Dude, their mesh.
So, because the Wake Forest will run the slow mesh.
Their mesh is so long. And, like, I think because of that, you kind of get sucked down a little bit if you're playing in the back seven. And so, like, yeah, I'm just interested. I think that's a great pick because they are very compelling for me, too. Number one, it's year two for Marcus Freeman. And obviously Notre Dame people are not patient. So they're going to need to show something this year. Obviously they have a enormous opportunity to do that playing Ohio State early. So they're going to get tested real quick. And, that's a really, really compelling early season matchup. But, yeah, man, that's a good one. I'm going to throw some other ones at you. Wisconsin, super interested in Wisconsin. So you got Tanner Mordecai there. They're going to run a wide open offense, which feels almost dirty coming out of my mouth saying that about a Wisconsin team. you're used to like Joe Thomas and Barry Alvarez's teams and Paul Christ and Brett Bielema. And we're just going to punch you in the mouth and jump around is going to come in the fourth quarter. And we need to jump around because we've kind of been asleep for the last three quarters. And so it's not going to be that way no more. I mean, they're going to be jumping around from opening kick, baby. It's fixing to be electric. And, like, Luke Fickell there, I think Luke Fickell is about to be a weapon in the Big Ten recruiting at Wisconsin. So, I mean, look, I've told you this one bajillion times. That is, like, on my football trip bucket list to go watch a game at Camp Randall just because I love Madison so much. But so, dude, they're on my list. How about Oregon State? Not just because of the roster they have coming back and the season they had last year, transfer with DJU, but also it's kind of an opportunity to be like, hey, look, everybody's leaving us, but we're valuable type thing. Don't you think? Like almost like their final letter to college football that, hey, look, we're still relevant here in Corvallis. So, man, I think they're interesting. How about your boy Big Penix Energy up in Washington?
Yeah, I love Michael Penix. I'll respond to all three of them. Oregon State, I love. I think Oregon State's defense is just stout, and they're in the Pac-12. Nobody plays defense, so they already got the leg up. Now we don't know how Oregon's going to look on defense this year, given Lanning year two. So we'll kind of see how he gets to put his real mark on it. on a bringing an SEC style defense to the Pac-12. So we'll kind of see how that looks this year. But Oregon State defense was great last year, and they really didn't lose a lot. I think bringing DJU over there will be great because I think they're going to let him play to his skill set and not try to, you know, put a square peg in a round hole like they did at Clemson. And he's not going to be under so much pressure there. So I think he's going to really be able to show his skill set. I like Oregon State. I think Oregon State has a really good shot at 10 wins and going to really provide a lot of, you know, fun atmosphere this year.
Yeah.
Now, in regards to Wisconsin, I think they're going to be better next year. I think they're more of a 2024 story. I think they're going to be – it's going to be interesting to see how they look this year because it's going to be so just weird. But we're not going to be seeing those – they're not going to be able to bet the under as much on them this year. Let's just say it that way.
Yes, correct.
Because – and it may not be because they're scoring. It may be because they're turning the ball over so much. And I love Mordecai. I really do. I think he's got a shot to really put up some big numbers there. But I just – I feel like they're a year away because they're going to need – Fickell's going to need a little bit more time to get his guys in there. I love, love, love Washington. I really, really hope that this is the year. I mean, they haven't really been in it. And really – it hasn't really felt like they've had a real shot since they made the playoff. And they kind of came out of nowhere that year to make the playoff. What was that, 20
– Yeah.
Was that 2014? Was that the first year? Or was that 2015?
Hold on.
It was early on. I know it was early in. It was early on.
I don't know if it was – was it 2014? I don't know if it was 2014. For some reason, I want to say 2016, but that might not be right either. I mean, Chris Peterson –
it was really early on. It was one of the first few ones. Yeah. But, I mean, either way, it's – they've got a really good squad. They've got a good quarterback. But it's really going to come down to them and Oregon on that side, in my opinion. They've got the two best quarterbacks.
I think Oregon's – which maybe less compelling because they had such a good year last year. However, Dan Lanning year two, Bo Nix coming back when he could have left, and which he seemed to get more and more comfortable as the year went on. So, in a lot of ways, this is going to sound weird coming out of my mouth, but Pac-12 kind of compelling. Lots of compelling storylines in the Pac-12 this year, especially given the circumstance that the conference is essentially going to be no more. I mean, what's the stories now saying that the four that are left try to cannibalize the Mountain West and that becomes the new Pac-12? I mean, that's kind of what they're saying, right? But
yeah,
because the whole what was it? Was it Cal and Stanford or was it Washington and Stanford to go to the ACC?
Cal and Stanford.
All right, and that the kibosh got put on that, so.
Yeah, because four teams voted no.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that Greg Sankey came out and I thought made a pretty, not guarded, but direct statement without addressing things about expansion and what they were going to do. They seem pretty set at 16, almost kind of like a message across the bow that, hey, Florida State and Clemson, we're not so interested. Which is, that was kind of the question I'd asked you and I asked my brother was, the whole push with all these expansions has been television markets. Well, what television market does Tallahassee and Clemson, South Carolina pull, right? And so, like, the argument to that is, well, they've been such good programs. My argument to that, though, is take away Jameis Winston in what year was that, 2013. When has Florida State been relevant? In the last 15 years, maybe longer than that. It's like, I feel like we romanticize a lot because we love college football and that's what it is, right? There's all this sentiment. We romanticize Florida State for what they were in the 90s. We romanticize Miami for what they were in the 80s, 90s, and the beginning of the 2000s. But like, those programs aren't that anymore. So I think their value is bloated, is what I'm putting forward. And I think that's kind of what Greg Sankey was hinting at, is look, we're not on board. You guys want to come here, this ain't it.
At this point, would Clemson and Florida State even get the same deal as Washington and Oregon to come over?
Not with the SEC, I don't think they would.
No, I mean with the Big Ten. Like, would they even get the same deal that they got with the Big Ten? Because that was part of the reason of getting those two voted in was they were getting so much less money through this current deal.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's something I think the Big Ten has to navigate, because the more people they add, it's more pieces of the pie, which, again, if you're the TV networks, you kind of got to start going, well, how much value add is it to have this team? Like, how much value add is it to have UCLA playing Rutgers on our docket? Like, I don't know. I don't know how the economics are going to work out on that, but I don't know, man. It's going to be super interesting. I want to ask you another question. I saw Josh Pate ask this on his show, and I think it's an interesting question. You have to have 2007 college football for the rest of your life, or you have to have 2024 college football for the rest of your life. Which one do you choose?
Meaning the style of football, like the BCS, or meaning just that chaotic year?
The rules.
Oh, the rules.
No, the rules.
Oh, okay.
2007, BCS is how we determine a champion. 2024, playoff and realigned conferences is how we determine the champion.
Give me 2007 every day of the week.
Yeah, man, it's got me in a pretzel, because while I loathe the realignment piece of the 2024 puzzle and the loss of regionality and tradition that comes with it, which we get to keep if I pick 2007, I hated the BCS with the fire of 1,000 suns, because I just thought it was such an inequitable way to decide a champion, right? And everybody always is going to moan and complain, oh, it's value a regular season and blah, blah, blah. Well, like, dude, if your best player gets hurt week two and you lose a game week three, and then he comes back for the rest of the year and you don't lose a game in the BCS area, you don't get to play for the title. Well, is that just? I mean, I just think having a playoff is a more representative model for who is the best team at the end of the season. Like, for example, you could make a very, very strong argument that Alabama may have been the second best team in the country at the end of the year last year, fully healthy, no?
Yeah.
And in a bigger playoff, they get a bite at that apple. And I'm all for that. So it's tough for me, man. Let me play devil's advocate with you, okay? 2007 rules, no Georgia national championship in 2021.
We don't even make the national championship in 2017.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, I think people go hard and fast and like 2007. And it's like, well, your Georgia fan might want to think about that.
I agree with all of that, but I'm looking at the bigger picture of the, if you were putting me against 2021 rules in 2007, that's different. Or even if you're putting me like, giving me the two, if you're giving me the 14 playoff in 2024, I'm taking that probably over 2007. It's the 12 team playoff plus the realignment versus 2007. I'm taking 2007. It's all the changes in one fell swoop that are coming to college football next year. Plus NIL being legal, plus the transfer portal, all of that. It's every single thing that has changed in college football, really in the span of 4 years at that point, once it'll all be done.
Yeah.
That's what I'm taking out of it to go back to 2007. Really, if you take us, it could be, I would be happy with 2014 rules, you know, to get the playoff.
Yeah.
And not have any of the crap after that.
Yeah.
Give me 2014. Like, I'm fine with the playoff. I hate the BCS just like you do. I completely agree. The BCS sucks. It was terrible. I hated the fact that a computer was choosing based off of – the computer was taking data based off of human polls, and the fact that a game where the number one team beats UL Monroe 63-7 counts the same as number two beating number three 63-7. You know, it didn't make any sense.
I guess my other devil's advocate argument with NIL is, in an NIL world, Todd Gurley doesn't get suspended. So, like, this is what I'm saying, man. There are, like, pretzel answers on this. Like, there are things that have adversely affected.
I hate NIL. I hate it. I hate it the way it's currently constructed. I hate it the way it's currently constructed.
I think I could talk myself into 2024. I'm just saying that. Which is, should be the all-time shocker of all shockers on this television, on this program.
But you got to understand, we've had it from both ways. Like, I look at it, if I was born today and I was only ever going to experience 2024, I wouldn't mind
it. Okay. And that's fair. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or if I was a kid, like if I was your younger children and I was really only going to ever experience 2024 onward as a college football fan, I really wouldn't hate it. But having the experience of being a child and going through where there were four different champions crowned in the 90s at times, and then going through the BCS era, and then going through the playoff era, and then going through what we're getting ready to go through right now, if I have to choose one of those, I'm choosing the 2014 playoff era, like before the NIL changes and the conference realignment. But if I have to choose between 2007 BCS and 2024 cluster, which we're getting ready to get next year, I'm probably going to choose 2007 BCS.
I'm telling you, man, it's a pretzel answer for me. I love it, though. It's such a great question.
I will, however, say, though, the first time I set foot at a home playoff game at UGA will probably change my mind.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, man. It's just a tough thing for me to get hard and fast on one way or the other. But, yeah, I love the question. All right, homie. Well, that's all I got this week. Those are all the things. I got you all ginned up, which is just what I wanted. I love a ginned up James. So, mission accomplished. All right, homie. Well, we got more to come, man. We're getting closer and closer. 19 days away. Woo! Woo! We're in the teens, baby.
So close. So close.
All right. Well, I can't wait to see that beautiful. Can't wait to see that beautiful bearded face next week.
Sounds good, brother.
Until then, go Dawgs.
Go Dawgs.
Hey, George is better now.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.